Now we're going to change track a bit. We'll get out of the legal stuff and we'll have a bit of fun and talk about some other things. But the first thing we want to talk about is a huge birthday, 110 years old. It's my pleasure to welcome Jennifer, and she's with the Red Cross. We've spoken to Jennifer probably last year. We've spoken to her for 2 or 3 years. But 110 years the organisation's been going.
It is amazing. 110 years in Australia, because it started in Switzerland in 1872, but we started during the First World War, 8th of August 1914.
Is there anybody who is attributed to having brought it to Australia, or did it just come as an organisation?
No, Lady Helen Munro Ferguson, who was the wife of Australia's Governor General.
Yep.
She contacted the British Red Cross and arranged for the Australian Red Cross to start as a subsidiary of the British Red Cross in 1914, yep. And just 8 days after the start of World War One.
Yep.
Kennington Branch, which is up near Bendigo, was the very first branch to open in Australia.
Yeah. For this one. So with your 110 celebrations, are they up in Bendigo or are they in Melbourne?
They have been all over Australia. So it was August was the month that we celebrated.
Right.
In Victoria, there are 14 branches that have been in continuous operation since 1914. No gaps for the war, no gaps for when the committee failed or anything, 14 branches.
Yep.
The closest one to us here in the Yarra Valley is Berwick Upper Beaconsfield.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And they actually had their first meeting at St Margaret's School for Girls in Berwick, and the group have got a photo of the ladies who started their very first meeting.
There'd be some famous names amongst that, I would have thought.
There probably are. Our most famous Yarra Valley name, of course, is Dame Nellie Melba.
Yes.
Because during the First World War, as soon as that was announced, she came back home to Melbourne, started fundraising and raised tens of millions of pounds for the for Red Cross internationally, yep. as well as for other war efforts.
All right, so why did the lady... and I just can't remember her name because you crossed over pretty quick and I didn't pick it up. What made her decide that she'd like to bring Red Cross to Australia?
If only I knew.
Oh, we don't know.
I mean, thinking back to imagining yep. World War One, because I'm not old enough to have been around yep. During World War One.
No, neither am I, thank goodness.
No. So it would have been front and centre in everybody's minds. I mean, she was the wife of the Governor General, yep. so there would have been all sorts of conversations she was exposed to. Yep. The British Red Cross, other Red Cross, Red Cross internationally had been around for 45, 50 years yep. at that stage. People knew that their job was to help anybody in wartime, particularly injured, particularly displaced people. And so she arranged for the wives of each of the state governors to be the chairperson within each state.
Yeah.
And as I said, within a week of World War One starting, became...
So what was the main purpose? Like, was it raising money, but it was also... I mean, Red Cross, as we know it today, is in all sorts of things, and you're going to tell us all that they're in. But what was their prime reason for being in 1914 when they came to Australia?
Care packages.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of care packages
were created
for the troops. And they were, so the volunteers created the care packages, either knitting socks or collecting whatever goods that they were going to be sending overseas. They went to each state and then they were sorted out. And then more volunteers packed them and took them down to the equivalent of the local post office,
yep.
and arranged for them to be distributed across the world. To right. wherever Australian troops were serving.
It'd be for wherever Australian troops were serving, wouldn't it?
Yep. There were also some voluntary aid detachment, VADs, women who were involved in nursing duties as volunteers. That was also part of Red Cross's role in World War One.
All right. I've got to take a quick break, but I want to talk to you about... What is now compasses Red Cross, because there's a lot more than care packages.
He rocks in the treetops all day long, jumping in a
And that was a bit of an updated version. That was Michael Jackson with Rockin' Robin, not quite the sort of stuff that we play in Music Memories and more of the old rock and roll stuff back in, just can't think of who was saying that. But anyway, I'm talking to Jennifer for Red Cross. Now, we've been talking about 110 years, your birthday, and back then your prime object was to send these care packages overseas. What is Red Cross into now?
Red Cross is into a large number of programs.
I'll bet.
Everything is directed towards assisting vulnerable people. Not vulnerable animals, but vulnerable people, whether they're migrants, asylum seekers, trafficked people, people who have been in a disaster, socially isolated people.
And there's a lot of people socially isolated, unfortunately.
Yeah, we have two great programs specifically for such people. One of them is called Telecross, and that's basically a welfare check. Somebody calls once a day just to make sure that the person is there and no major issues.
Yep.
And the other is called Telechat, which is when somebody calls the person, say, once a week for about an hour, hour and a half chat, so that they develop a friendship and that person, who may not have very many people calling in on them, is able to have a chat and develop a friendship.
Because one of the things they tell me when you get older is that sometimes they've outlived a lot of their friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Particularly women, because all you blokes tend to drop off your perch, kick the bucket a little earlier than the average woman.
And I guess quite a lot of people, and I've discussed this on this program with a number of people, that quite a lot of people, they retire and they're going to travel. They might buy a caravan or they're going to do a lot of travel. Wifey doesn't always drive. Sometimes will have been driving, but hubby's going to drive the van around Australia and they're going to go all places, and he falls off the perch. And all of a sudden, some of these ladies haven't got licences, don't want to get them, but even the ones that do don't particularly want to start towing a caravan to Perth and all around Australia. So all of a sudden, those sorts of people can get isolated very, very easily.
They can, and actually that's one of the reasons we get a lot of members of Red Cross. They're looking for friendship groups. A lot of people do join, say, if they emigrate and they want to break into a local community and find like-minded friends. Yeah. But others, I can think of several of our members whose partners died and they had more time on their own and were looking for something where they could contribute and enjoy the company of other people while doing some good for the local community, and they've become Red Cross members.
Sounds good. Now, there's a lot more than that too. I'll bet.
There is. I was looking at some data before coming to speak with you today, and on the website it tells us that Red Cross is in 192 countries.
192?
And I was thinking, oh gosh, I wonder how many countries in the world there are. Well, I had to ask Mr. Google.
Yeah.
And there's 195.
So there's only three countries in the world you're not in.
Yeah. So my next, I haven't done it. I need to ask Google which three countries
which
is Red Cross not in.
Yeah. But even so, that's a terrific achievement.
It's amazing, and I'm sure every country does different things in their own way. And there are 14 million members or volunteers across the world.
14 million.
Nearly 17,000 of those are in Australia, and that's just slightly more than our percentage population, I think. So even though numbers are decreasing in pretty much any volunteer organisation, we're still just holding our own. There are about 120 branches in Victoria, just over 400 across Australia. And 1,416 members and friends of Red Cross fundraising and promoting Red Cross across Victoria.
Gee, that's terrific.
It's not bad.
Yep.
And on top of that, we have volunteers. Volunteers help in our programs. That might be emergency services. So it might be the people who are helping people complete paperwork and sort things out immediately after a disaster. It might be people driving patients to hospitals in our patient transport program.
Do you still run that, do you?
Yes.
Right. I didn't know that was still going.
Yes, in fact, over the last 12 months, 1,663 patient transport clients have been assisted across Victoria.
Gee,
there is our closest group. There's a group based in Wanturna.
Yep.
It does require a medical referral so that any GP can book a patient in for patient transport. They must have some sort of website that says that, you know, Eastern Volunteers and Red Cross and whoever else, all the different services must be on the same page on a GP website, and they get to book the patient into whatever is the most convenient service for them.
Gee, that's all right. I didn't realise it was still doing that.
Mm.
And that's for mainly, well, that was only for medical appointments, either into the hospital or the local GPs, or are they only hospital ones? Or
no, it's whatever medical appointment. It might be to a physiotherapist, or it might be, depends.
Yep.
A lot of them are from northern and western Victoria down to Melbourne. So they're, you know, 2 or 3 hour drives, but
pretty fair effort for volunteers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. On top of that,
there was going to be more.
We've got a trauma teddy program.
Well, tell us about that.
Volunteers knit little teddies, and they are distributed. Some by what we loosely call head office, others, the branches can drop them off. So, for example, we'll drop them off at the local police station or at Healesville Hospital or Maroondah Hospital or a dentist or the ambulance or CFA. The last 12 months, over 55,000 trauma teddies were knitted in Australia.
55,000?
55,000.
And these are for young people, aren't they?
Well, any age.
Yep.
If you've gone through a disaster and you're feeling a bit poorly, and somebody might offer you a trauma teddy because it's just a little bit of distraction. It's just something to cuddle.
Terrific.
It's just something nice. We have several stories of three generations of families who bring in their trauma teddies and say, look, you know, I got one. Yeah. Or little kids who've been into hospital a lot. We'll say, oh, I've got 7 trauma teddies, because every time they go to the Royal Children's, they get given a trauma teddy.
Which is terrific. So they go out mainly via the police, ambulance and
CFA.
Hospital as well.
So just recently, Hillcrest CFA, for example, contacted us and said, we're out of trauma teddies, and there had been a big accident over on Warburton Highway, and so Glenda, one of our members, dropped down, I think, 24 trauma teddies that she had in her car at the time. And there's this lovely photo on the Hillcrest CFA website of the trauma teddies all sat on the back bumper bar of the CFA truck.
Oh, that's terrific.
So they're there. And we give them to the ambulance. So in doctor surgeries, we're just driving past, we'll knock on the door and say, would you like some trauma teddies? They're all free. They're never sold. They're all free to the organisations that
use
them.
And so the ladies just knit these themselves?
Yep. So they buy the wool. Use scraps or whatever, so they knit them. But so on average, it would cost probably $3 or $4 for the wool for a trauma teddy.
Yep.
We have a special filling that's non-flammable that we provide, and a pattern that they have to follow.
So you've got these ladies at home who are volunteers.
Yep.
Obviously, they're not getting paid. It's actually costing them to volunteer because they're paying for the cost of the material.
Yep.
That's terrific.
It is. And what if, as we were chatting before, I also am involved with the metropolitan region.
Yeah.
And one of the members over in Keilor, she's in her 90s, and she manages the trauma teddy program over in that bit of Western Melbourne. She's supervising a young 16-year-old boy who is knitting trauma teddies for his Duke of Edinburgh Award.
Ah, oh, terrific.
Yeah.
I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. Welcome back. And we're talking to Jennifer, and we're talking about the Red Cross. Jennifer, there's a couple of things I'd just like to bring up, and I know you've got a lot of other things that you still do, and that's obviously, well, I wouldn't call them op shops, because you've got a number of shops around, but I've been in a couple of them, and they're certainly not sort of what I would have thought in the old-time op shops, where there's stuff that's, you know, it's average, but that's all. But you run some really nice shops too, don't you?
We certainly do. The Red Cross shops are all over Victoria, all over Australia. Our closest is in Croydon in the main street. And there are actually three or four op shops all together. Yep. And they are all location dependent, and they are dependent on the sorts of things that people are able to donate.
Yep.
So if they give us rusty saucepans, well, we probably wouldn't sell them. But if they give us rubbish, we can only sell rubbish. But a lot of all of the major charity organisations have interactions with clothing manufacturers and other organisations who will donate goods that they no longer want to sell. So
it's going about out of date, or it's
last season's fashion.
Yeah, or one or two items that and they're only sort of one-offs. And
that's right. Samples. Yes.
Yeah.
So we're lucky to have tie-ups with some companies. We did used to have one with Country Road, but I think they're working with Salvation Army now, and I can't remember off the top of my head who we do have tie-ups with. But we certainly are able to sell some brand new clothing that is donated to us by manufacturers. And in fact, over the last 12 months, 7.2 million donated items were sold through Red Cross shops across Australia.
7.2 million items?
Yep.
That's true. Now, you also are obviously part of Red Cross. To be able to do these things all costs money. And you do run fundraisers, and you've also had a big fundraiser that you've just had.
We have. Every August, we have what we call the Red Cross pop-up shop at the Melbourne Town Hall, and that takes hundreds, thousands of clothing items that have been donated over the year. In fact, we've just done the major run for collecting items for next year. We partner with Uber.
Yep.
Doesn't work out here, unfortunately, because there's not many Uber drivers out in the valley. But if we were in the city, you could call Uber and say, I've got a bag of clothes ready for you. They would come and pick it up and then take it to one of our depots. Free of charge to Red Cross, free of charge to the customer, Uber donating the services for that day. Then those items are all taken to our warehouse over in Western Melbourne and sorted by volunteers.
Yep.
The following August, they end up at the Melbourne Town Hall for this massive weekend pop-up shop, which this year raised over $200 million.
Fair dinkum.
$200 million. And it involved about 600 pop-up volunteers as well. The new way of finding out about volunteer opportunities is through the internet.
Yep.
And, for example, seek.com has a section called Seek Volunteer.
Yep.
And so about 500 people through that volunteered to go and help at the pop-up town hall Red Cross shop. And
terrific.
So they were screened and sorted and organised into shifts, and they went down and helped. I mean, imagine if you had to pay for that.
Yeah. Well, but apart from that, you also do local fundraisers too, don't you?
We do.
Yep.
We do. Yarra Valley Red Cross does a regular one, the first Saturday of every month at Launch Fresh over on Warburton Highway in Launching Place.
Yep. Yep.
We have a stall there that's 8 till 2:30, and we make jams, relishes, chutneys, cakes, biscuits. There are knitted things, lots of knitted toys. One of our ladies makes lots of bingo and bluey toys.
Well, they'd go well.
They do. She has to. They never last.
I've got a granddaughter and she loves bluey.
Well, you'll have to pop over on the first Saturday in December to buy one for her Christmas stocking, perhaps.
Yep.
In fact, I'll be on the stall that day. I'm always allocated December.
Yeah.
We have lots of things like beanies and baby booties and
aprons.
Aprons, we do. We have a lot of things made out of fabric as well. And there, most things are made by members or friends of members. We get sometimes it can be a stranger. Someone might just walk up to us at the stall and say, "I've made these. Would you like to sell them on the stall?" And
if, there you go.
Yep. And if we if we think they'll sell, which 99 times out of 100 we do, we say thank you very much, and it's incredibly generous of people to have paid for the goods and their time and to bring them along for us to help raise money.
And let's face it, there wouldn't be anybody that doesn't know about Red Cross.
I think it has the highest charity recognition across the world.
I wouldn't be surprised. What else? I've just got time for one more because I've got to take a break, but I'm not quite ready for it. What other program?
Well, emergency services, of course, is a very big one for Red Cross. And I've just looked at the annual annual report for 2024, and there were 213,000 people who were supported before, during, and after disasters across Australia.
213,000?
Yep.
And we're only talking Australia here, aren't we?
Yep, that's right. Yep. And there were
70 emergencies
we helped with last year, but there were 70 emergency activations across Australia last year, but only 9 of them were in Victoria.
Yeah, we were lucky last year.
We were.
All right, I've got to take a quick break. What I was waiting for has popped up now. I'll take that, and we'll be back with more. talking to Jennifer from Red Cross, and we've been talking about particularly 110 years they've been operating in Australia. You can't, not many organisations could top that. Now, you want to talk about Lifeblood.
I do. Lifeblood's really important, and yep, they're coming to Lilydale.
Blood is very important, full stop.
It is. Blood, plasma and platelets.
Yep.
9th to the 20th of December will be in Lilydale, so...
What, 9th?
9th to the 20th. We'll repeat that before we finish. Yeah. At the Baptist Church down there on Swansea Road. But it is very important. We...
You've gone all quiet. One of the things too, apart from the fact that without blood there's a huge problem, and we are using a lot of blood. On that 9th to the 20th, do they have to book in first?
Ideally, they book in. The second week is not as busy as the first week, so if they wanted to just walk in, they'd be better off trying the second week. And you can do that through the Lifeblood website, lifeblood.com.au.
Lifeblood, all one word?
Yep, .com.au.
.com.au, yeah.
And I will tell you about the app a little bit later.
Yep.
But it is very important. We helped 1.6 million people across Australia last 12 months.
Yep.
With donations of plasma or platelets.
Plasma or...
platelets.
What's that?
So platelets is part of the blood, and it gets extracted from the donations, because some people don't need whole blood. Different diseases need different things, and you might need a different guest in order to explain the medical aspects of that.
To be honest, I thought blood was blood.
No. We've got different sorts of blood. You've all heard about O positive and A positive, different.
But I still thought blood was blood, apart from that. But you're saying that not everybody has the whole body of the blood.
No. And in fact, a lot of donors just give plasma. So their blood is taken at Lifeblood, put through a machine, and one component of it is taken out, and the rest of it is put back in the bloody. In the body.
Fair dinkum. I didn't know they did that.
And people can do that much more frequently than giving blood.
They?
Yes, you can only give blood every 3 months.
Yep.
4 months, every quarter. And but you can go every 2 or 3 weeks to give plasma. And some people do. Not obviously not to Lilydale, but Ringwood is one of our permanent centres, and they will go down frequently.
True. Mm. So it's not as hard on the person's blood. Well, none of it's hard, but I mean, if you can do it more often, it doesn't have to build up again.
No.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Didn't know about that. All right, we've still got a couple of minutes. What else would you like?
I bet you didn't know that we also are the organisation which collects and distributes breast milk for...
No, do you?
Yep. Over 4,000 litres.
Gee. I don't want to get into it too far for obvious reasons, but how do you collect it? And how do you transport?
I'm guessing it's a breast pump. Like, just women express milk all the time for their their babies. You know, if they're going out and they need to leave milk for somebody else to give to the baby, they express milk with a pump. It would be the same situation.
Well, so, Jennifer, I really don't want to get into this.
Neither do I, because
I shouldn't be there. But I thought the lady only produced enough for her own child. So some of these other ladies
might be somebody who can continue. It might have weaned their child off, or for some reason their child is not able to utilise the breast milk, but that woman is still happy to keep expressing milk, which mimics the normal baby suckling, and then that milk is used for, say, a premature baby or for some baby the mother is not able to provide milk.
I think it's
milk.
A terrific idea, but I just didn't think that there would be any of it available, to be honest.
4,042 litres in last financial
that's
year.
That's no mean effort, is it?
No. We're looking at each other, and there's all sorts of things going through our heads, and neither of us know the answers to some of those specifics.
And I don't want to go down that track because but I'm amazed that first of all that you can. Well, I'm not surprised you can get it, but I'm surprised that people can keep supplying it, and the fact that your organisation collects
it. Yep, refrigerates it, distributes it to the various hospitals. And
so I was just going to ask you that. Where does it go then? It goes to hospitals, does it?
Yep. And a big thank you to the 559,000 Australians who donated the blood that helped 1.6 million people.
And I guess, you've intrigued me on this other. I guess apart from the fact with this breast milk, you've also got volunteers carting it around too, haven't you?
No, Lifeblood is. Well, that I'd be surprised at that. I think that would probably be a paid employee.
Yeah, right.
And Lifeblood is conducted on behalf of the federal government.
Yep.
And so it's funded federally.
And it should be.
Yeah.
And it should be.
Yeah.
All right. Have you got another couple of things you want to tell us about? Now, you can organise too, or you play some part in trying to put families together. Am I right? You still do
that? We do. And in fact, Red Cross is the very first organisation. It's thought back in 1869 when Henry Dunant came across the Battle of Solferino in northern Italy. A dying soldier asked him to take a message back to his mother in France. And that was what's thought to be the first time that there was a family tracing mechanism.
Right, yeah.
And we still do that right across the world. In Australia, we have a team of people, some paid, some volunteers, who try to connect families. So somebody will ring up or write and say, you know, I left this country because of war and I haven't seen my family since, or because of famine, whatever disaster it was that caused the split. And Red Cross will then use all of their Red Cross contacts in that country. It might be putting notices up in community centres. It might be, say, in an African country, when the Red Cross volunteer cycles from village to village, they might say, do you know Joe Blow?
So you use your volunteers and worldwide. That's terrific.
Right, yes.
I didn't know how you do that.
And I can't quite remember the exact number, but I'm fairly sure that in the last 12 months it was something like 140 families were reconnected through our little program in Australia and many more across the world.
Gee, that's really... And so you actually go out, like, it's not just a case of on the computer and hoping you find someone. You actually have volunteers out there looking.
They'll do that as well. They might use the family history websites.
Yeah. Yeah.
They might put notices in newspapers and, anybody working or volunteering in the area
where they were last known
will be invited to get involved. We've had one in the Yarra Valley. There was one man who lived out here who was reconnected with his family, and we didn't actually know about it because they were finding his family overseas.
Yeah.
The first we knew about it was when he gave us a donation of $50 or something to say thank you.
That's terrific, isn't it? And I bet for him it was a...
life-changing.
Yeah. Because, as you say, some of these people come out, and they come out years ago, and, you know, perhaps the level that they knew has died off, and they've got nieces and nephews. Yeah.
And if you've left a country because of war or famine or a epidemic, a fire. I mean, if the fire's burnt all the records, it's very difficult for anybody to be found.
That's
a
terrific.
Family tracing program.
It's family tracing, it's called, is it? Mm. Look, we've got about another 3.5 minutes. Do you want to give another plug, particularly on the Lifeblood, for the 9th to the 20th of December? You were going to tell a bit more about booking in and that.
Yep. So the website, Lifeblood, you just put into your search engine Lifeblood and you'll find it, or download our new app.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, and you can book into Lifeblood or change your appointment via the app. You also get a record. I was just looking at it before. You get a record now, which is a new part of it, of your donations and what your blood pressure was and your hemoglobin, the things that they collect from that. So
I mean, that's
cool.
One of the other things too, which gets undersold, because obviously you've got to make sure that that what you're taking, A, the person can stand with it and all that sort of, that, you know, they're able to give it. But you also, It's a bit of a health check too, isn't it?
It is. A really free, easy, quick. I mean, yep. You're never there for more than an hour.
Yep.
And
you get your cup of tea at the end.
Well, that depends on whether you... that depends. There has to be a volunteer there to man the kettle because they don't like people who may be at risk of fainting after giving blood. But there are lots of goodies that do not require a volunteer to help you. And if you're giving blood for the first time, you need to be between 18 and 75.
Yep.
If you've been giving blood constantly, you can keep going until you're no longer healthy enough.
Yep.
You used to have to wait if we'd had a tattoo or body piercing, but now you can do that within 24 hours of getting a tattoo, so long as it's been done at a registered tattoo clinic. Right. Hopefully not be pregnant or have given birth within the last 9 months.
Yep.
Hopefully have a healthy heart.
Yep.
You've just had a heart attack. You're probably not the best person to
chuff
along. Your hemoglobin, your iron levels need to be normal. No injected recreational drugs within the last 5 years. And overseas travel can sometimes interfere with giving blood. It depends what country you've been to.
Because of the injections you've had to have, or...?
Or the diseases that you might be exposed to if you went to some of the countries where there might be, yellow fever or typhoid or something like that. You know, obviously we don't want to have...
We don't want to pass that on to people, do you?
No. So you can check all that on the website or call them on 131495.
131495. Yeah.
Or have a look on the website.
We've got to go in half a tick, so let's get going. It's lifeblood.com.au. Have a look on there or download this app or phone them on 131495, 131495.
And if you can't donate blood, encourage somebody else to. The
Good
9th
idea.
To the 20th of December.
Yeah, and that's down in Lilydale.
Yep.
At the address again?
The Lilydale Baptist Church on the corner of Hull Road and Swansea Road.
Can't be easier. Jennifer, it's been a joy to have you again. I mean, there's not many organisations that have been around for 110... Well, no, the organisation's been a lot longer than 110 years. It's just in Australia. Got to go. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Jennifer. Bye.